You're listening to The Stone Tapes with Sam Stone, David J. Howe, Patricia H. Ash, George Mann and Robin Pierce. A show which sheds a little slice of geek sunshine into the ether.
In dreams he came.
Thank you. And that was Eurythmics. Here Comes the Rain Again. A bit of a theme going on this month with the rain.
No, I'm terribly sorry about that.
David might have to tell you why later. Anyway, I'm Sam Stone. Welcome to the 55th fabulous edition of the Stone Tapes. Joining us in the studio this month, we have David J. Howe.
Oh, hello.
George Mann.
Hello.
Eloise Sheehan.
Hi.
As well as our producer extraordinaire, Alex Lefchuk.
Guten Abend.
And on the telephone moment, Patricia H. Ash.
Hello.
Hello, Patricia. And joining us shortly will be Robin Pearce.
And
of course, also Joshua Lee Friedman this month, which
yeah,
we've got
a full house. Fantastic.
So, anyway, good evening, good morning. Whatever time of day it is for you, Patricia.
Afternoon.
And it feels like a long time since I spoke to you last, and it is only a month, but it feels a lot longer. I don't know why. It's been a very long month.
A bit, I think, because of course we did the live show.
Yes. Well, yeah, we did the live show.
Now available for listening and streaming.
Is that canon, David?
Our
live show is canon.
Well, if your canon includes the live shows, then it certainly is canon. Yes, it is canon.
We did have Eloise on that show, but of course we really missed you, George.
Oh, thank
Robin
you.
Was there
I'm
too,
sorry
but
not to be there.
We did miss you.
And we had the lovely Sophie Aldred.
We
so
did.
It was a good trade, to be honest.
She was great fun. She was very great fun, wasn't she?
She's
so lively and full of energy and
yes,
amazing.
Energy.
Speaking of lively and full of energy,
Patricia!
Patricia!
Back to your corner! So tell us what you're going to be talking about today.
Cat wrangler extraordinaire.
Yes, I've got a kitten in my lap right now.
Hey.
Sounds like my idea of heaven.
Cat because they're all like 12 out of 10. Anyway, this month I watched 1922 on Netflix. It's based on a Stephen King novella, and good golly, it is eerie.
Yeah?
I'm not sure what Stephen King has against the American heartland, but yikes. So creepy.
Give us a summary of what the story's about. What was it about?
Right, so it's set in 1922. This farmer named Wilf murders his wife because she wants to sell the farm, and he does not want to sell the farm. And so then he loses the farm and absolutely everything he loves anyway in a horrifying and supernatural way. And it made me afraid of rats because his ghost wife is basically the queen of rats.
Ooh.
And they just
freaky.
Eat everything. They destroy his house. They destroy his cows somehow. He drives his son away just kind of accidentally, and then the rats eat his son.
Oh, dear.
So
why is
creepy.
It called 1922 rather than the rats?
Are there 1,922 rats?
There might be that many rats.
It could be.
But I think it's because that's when it's set, that's the year, and the... The whole thing is sort of like a flashback. This Wilf is writing out this big, long confession letter, and I believe it starts, in 1922, I killed my wife. And that was a bad idea. Oh, no, rats are eating me.
I guess there's also the...
There's
the James Herbert rats.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's already been done, that one.
Yeah, because there would be... natural assumption that it was that instead of...
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So this is based on a King novella. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, it is. And it is it's really well done. The cinematography is beautiful, the way that they use what's in the shot to convey what's in Wilf's head, because he doesn't talk much.
Rat's got his tongue.
Movie does the talking for him, and the soundtrack is beautifully eerie. It starts immediately. You're like, oh dear, this is not good. Nothing that happens in this movie is good.
Oh dear.
It's creepy already, and it's just a street scene.
I haven't. It's completely
passed
me by.
I think you would really like it.
Yeah, it sounds like we would. It sounds right up my alley.
Is it?
I like it 9 out of 10.
There's rats in alleys.
Oh, well, that's good,
though. I was going to say there are rats in alleys. Yes.
Be careful.
Yes. So is it? Was it on a streaming service? Yeah.
Yeah, I found it on. I think it's a Netflix original.
Oh, right. Oh, okay. Well, that'd be easy for us to find then.
Wow.
Definitely easy.
That's brilliant. 1922, the number. 1922. The
and it was 1922.
And you gave it 9 out of 10. Anybody else seen this? Any of our crew seen this?
I've seen this film.
And what was your thoughts on it, Eloise?
It's quite different for a Stephen King film, to be honest. I personally found it quite plain. And not eerie at all, in my opinion.
No.
I think it's because they've switched how you view this film. Oh. Normally with horror films, and the element that makes you scared is you're scared for the character as well.
Yeah.
But in this, some people would feel like they deserved it.
They're not very sympathetic.
Yes, which takes away their
elements
of horror.
They did deserve it.
So. They did deserve it. So you're cheering the rats on, basically.
Yes. So it's not as...
Pretty much.
As it should be.
I was like that when I watched Attack the Block. I wanted the aliens to win.
Yeah. It's the same sort of thing.
They were such scumbags, those kids.
They were horrible.
They were horrible. They had no redeeming qualities.
I wanted the black monster things who were swarming up the things to win.
Oh, thank you so much, Patricia. That was great. We'll speak to you again soon. I never meant to call you in your sorrow. I never meant to call you in your pain. I'm the one who wants to have you laughing. a little dip into Prince of Purple Rain. Yes, we're on that rain
theme
again.
We're on the rain theme again, yes, yes.
I wonder why, David. Why on earth are you obsessed with rain at the moment?
Obsessed with rain. We've had five dry days, actually.
We have. It's been extraordinary. It's been absolutely amazing.
I've started to think that there was never any rain ever.
That's the first dry days we've had, five dry days we've had since August.
It's mad, isn't it?
Mm. Absolutely mad.
Crazy.
Yes. Lincolnshire is underwater.
It is. And now joining us from his castle,
because if you're in a castle, you don't tend to get flooded because you tend to be out and above the top, don't you, Robin?
Oh, you can be up on the turret.
You would be absolutely surprised because that moat can flood.
Really?
Yeah, I bet it can.
You have a flooded moat.
Yeah.
And the only reason it has rained on you as it has is because Wales is usually inundated by rain.
Yeah.
And I did a little rain dance.
Robin!
Around the tree. Clothing may or may not have been involved. And I sent it your way.
That's it, I'm going to set the druids on you.
That's so
I'm
going
to send them all up to Wales.
Well, can't we still shoot Welshmen with bow and arrows?
I think we're allowed to, actually. If they're crossing London Bridge with a sheep.
Send the druids to me if you want, David J. Howe. Those druids work for me.
Yeah, they do. You've got no chance there, I'm afraid.
Oh, well, never mind. Hello, Robin.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
We're good.
How are you doing?
Not bad at all, thank you very much, sir. Your good self, it's been too long since we crossed lightsabers.
I know, we were just saying I missed the live show and, you know, gutted to miss it. But I'm back now.
Yeah, and we've got Eloise joined us as well today.
Yay!
Oh, hi, Robin.
How's it going, Wheezy?
Good.
Wheezy. Wheezy, there you
go. You've already got a nickname
already.
Now. You're definitely part of the team.
That's what my mum calls me as well, just to, like, Wheezy.
So, Robin, what have you been watching for us this month?
Well, he said he'd be back. I went to see Terminator, Dark Fate.
Yes.
And, you know, Instinct and other reviewers and box office receipts, they were telling me, don't do this. Do not do this. But it's Arnold Schwarzenegger, it's Linda Hamilton. They are back in a Terminator film for the first time in 28 years. Years.
My word.
Let that one sink in for a second.
Oh, it had to be done then in that case. I'll have to see this one too.
I thought, you know what? I don't really care what other people think, which is my normal state of mind because, hey, you guys have seen how I dress, right? I went to see it. And you know what? Everybody is wrong.
Right.
They are all wrong. Don't listen to them. They are wrong. They are talking out of what they should be sitting on.
Tell us why.
That's what happens if you put a Terminator together in the wrong way. Anyway.
Terminator by IKEA.
Yes, that's the one.
Other self-assembly robots are available.
They are, yes, indeed.
So we start off, and of course, I went in with a few problems, like I normally do. Because I always overthink these things. It's like, you know what, really? Terminator, now? The date for Skynet happening has been. And that's the problem with science fiction. When you set a date in the near future, your sci-fi movie becomes invalid. You know, 2001 A Space Odyssey. We never went to Jupiter, did we? I mean, where's my flying car? Come on,
Where's my jetpack? Yeah.
Where's Jaws 24? Exactly. That's what I want to know.
So anyway, the film starts ominously with Terminators rising out of the sea, and I instantly went straight back to my favourite robot rising up out of the sea, which, believe it or not, was not Colossus of New York, but was in fact the Dalek in the Peter Cushing Invasion Earth.
Except, of course, it's not a robot, but we'll gloss over that.
Really, David J. Howe? Really?
You went there.
He's on form today.
I'm on form.
I'm just writing a note to myself, and the note reads, oh, man. So I'm thinking, where are they going to go with this? See, there's a new Terminator.
Right.
And he's after a young lady called Danny Ramos. Who worked in a car factory somewhere in Mexico with her brother. And her brother falls foul of this new Terminator along with, there's this young lady around called Grace, who may or may not be a Terminator, but turns out that she's a cyborg from the future.
Right.
It all sounds very, very familiar, and I'm thinking, hang on a second. Anyway, Linda Hamilton turns up as Sarah Connor, and we find out that, yes, indeed, she did stop Skynet. So the first and second Terminator movies are still canon.
Right.
What she did in Terminator 2 stands. But the American government had another AI program which, like Skynet would have, took over and started eradicating we puny humans. This is called Legion.
Oh.
So there's an inevitability about it, that it doesn't matter if you stop this happening by one means, another means will happen. It's inevitable that artificial intelligence will realize that it should be running the planet, not us. And actually, this is supported by several notable scientists in real life, as I'm sure Alex will attest.
Singularity, my man. Singularity.
Indeed.
Five years away, approximating singularity.
So, once again, Sarah Connor is trying to help somebody with a Terminator against them, and there is only one person who can help them. Because very early in the film, very surprisingly, John Connor, as a child, is killed.
Because, of course, history has been changed anyway.
He didn't need to, yes, exactly.
Oh, dear.
And the mysterious entity that can help them is called Carl. This is where it gets really interesting. Carl is played by Arnold Schwarzenegger and is the Terminator 800 that actually shot John Connor after the event of Judgment Day.
Right.
And as Skynet never came about, his mission was completed, he actually achieved a sense of self-awareness, he integrated himself into society.
He grew a beard.
And got married, grew a beard, and raised a stepson. And he's a much-loved member of the community.
Mm.
So he is the only one that can help Sarah, who wants to kill him because he's a Terminator. And we go on from there.
Wow. Interesting.
Now, the end of the film, we can go either way. It can either be the start of a new series with new characters, or it ends nicely where it is.
Ah.
And I don't think we need him back, because this is a good ending.
Right. Okay. That all sounds fascinating.
I would have gone in thinking, 6, maybe 7. I walked away with an 8.
Oh, wow. That's not bad.
Wow.
And it was well worth seeing. It is the sequel to Terminator Judgment Day that we have all been waiting
for.
Right. So the third...
And I recommend it.
I'd give it 8.5, actually.
The second one.
8.5 for me.
Because we watched Terminator...
It began with an S.
Salvation.
Salvation.
Which neither Sam nor I even knew existed.
No,
it just so completely passed us by.
Despite Christian Bale...
Yeah, despite Christian Bale.
Completely passed us by.
I know.
The
amazing.
Only thing I can remember about that film is it's all very sunny, and Steve reckons that the apocalypse will never happen on a sunny day.
Yeah.
And there's a giant robot somewhere around a remote filling station in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
That's all I can remember.
There is a filling station somewhere.
That sounds fascinating.
So much of Transformers.
Dark Fate sounds really rather nice.
Eloise, have you seen any of the Terminator films?
I saw one when I was younger and I remember nothing of them.
So maybe that's a little bit where we need to point you in the direction.
Do you know who Arnold Schwarzenegger is?
I do, I'm not that young.
Oh, okay.
You know what? My heart almost stopped then.
Oh dear.
And obviously you know them all.
Yeah, I mean, Jordan. So Terminator 2 is, you know, my brother lives out in LA and there's a filmmaker. Terminator 2 is responsible for that. That and Robocop. They were like touchstones of our youth, and they're what inspired Scott.
Terminator 2 was just such a brilliant film.
Terminator 2, particularly,
it's my personal favourite at this point.
they're kind of the liquidy effects in it. He learned how to do that on the Amiga in our bedroom. He kept me away for hours because it used to grind and grind and grind through the night while he was trying to render these effects. But he
made 1 second of movement.
But he managed to make a character. He did a short film called The Sneeze, where he sneezed some snot out and it came to life as a liquid thing, and he chased him around and he won Young Filmmaker of the Year for it.
Oh my gosh, that's brilliant.
So Terminator 2 is a direct inspiration on him.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
Fantastic.
That's brilliant.
That is fantastic.
That's brilliant.
There's money in them, thou mucus.
There is. There is. Apparently so.
Well, thank you so much, Robin. We'll speak to you again next month.
We're going to let you go this
time. Yeah, we're going to let you go this time.
Okay, guys.
Because we're going to be joined shortly.
Chase Masterson, founder of the Pop Culture Hero Coalition. the first ever organization to make a stand against bullying, racism, misogyny, LGBT bullying, cyberbullying, and other forms of hate using pop culture stories that we love. We all love superheroes. Why not be one? Check out our website at www.popcultureherocoalition.org. Follow us on Facebook at Pop Culture Hero Coalition and on Twitter at superhero IRL. Thanks so much. Hi, this is Chase Masterson, and you're listening to Sam Stone and Friends with the Stone Tapes on Siren FM.
Hello, and joining us now on the telephone is Joshua Lou Friedman, all the way from Los Angeles. Hello, Josh.
Hello.
Hey. Hey. He's here.
It's been a while.
Well, it's been a while, and I shouldn't be here. I'm shooting night, so I just have to be awake, and sorry if I'm a little groggy, but...
That's all right. We'll ask you more about that. But for the moment, we're going to bring in our lovely new, what do we call you? Teammate?
Stonette.
I like that. You're a Stonette.
I'll take it.
Which is Eloise Sheehan. And she's going to tell us a little bit about what she's been watching recently. And we're going to be focusing, which is where we need your help as well here, Josh, on a bit of Stephen King and Joe Hill. So, Eloise, tell us about...
I have recently been watching Doctor Sleep. I went to see that after revisiting The Shining. I really like Stephen King, so whenever there's a new film or TV show, I make sure I go and watch it. I haven't seen the book, though, so I can't compare the book of Dr. Sleep to the film, but the film, I think, is fantastic. A bit long, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I can't really give anything away.
So if you take The Shining, because I suspect most people have seen The Shining and everything, and this is the sequel, isn't it?
This is the sequel, yes.
So how does it kind of intersect?
It shows you what Danny, the little boy, has been up to now he has grown up and got older, and how The Shining is still affecting him.
And The Shining is this sort of strange mental...
Yes, sort of talking to people magicalness kind of that he has.
Thing. Yes, this power that he has.
Yes, it's a lot more supernatural, more less like a Stephen King film, a horror film, more like a superhero movie, in my opinion, because there's a lot of other... characters that are being introduced that have The Shining as well as him with all these different powers.
Oh, okay.
Like a new sort of X-Men sort of
esque. So it's a bit of an ensemble movie in a way.
It is, yes.
I heard it was kind of a mix of a sequel to The Shining, but also a truer rendition of the book as well, because Stephen King notoriously kind of hated the first movie, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And then wrote his sequel to the book, and this is meant to be like a halfway house, as I understand it, between kind of being true to the book and also being the sequel.
Gosh.
Yeah, I have to agree with that, having been familiar with the book. It is a faithful adaptation of the novel while being a sequel to Kubrick's film, and I don't think that's giving anything away.
Okay. And does it achieve that? Does it achieve that, Josh?
Yeah, it does. I agree with Eloise. It's a slow burn, but a rewarding one if you stay with it. It definitely, again, Rebecca Ferguson plays a character in the film. I would say the villain, and her performance is mesmerizing, so there's a big plus there. But definitely a slow burn while being a sequel to the Kubrick film, so I back that 100%.
So when you say a sequel... to the Kubrick film. You've seen the Kubrick film, Eloise,
presumably. Yeah, of course.
So when you say sequel to the Kubrick film, presumably you mean in terms of narrative rather than stylistically?
Both, to be honest.
Really?
I'm going to say stylistically. Stylistically as well as narrative.
Yeah.
Because
interesting.
They do hire actors to look like Jack Nicholson and Shelley Duvall.
They actually use some of the original footage as well, which they have remastered and put snow upon to make it look different, but have used the original footage from the same film.
Oh, interesting. Oh, wow.
And the director managed to get some of the blueprints as well from Stanley Kubrick to redo the shots for the hotel and get everything perfect.
So the hotel, the overlook is like the same,
exactly
basically.
Exactly the same.
Same carpet.
Absolutely everything.
that's all there, but... She's right. There is footage from the original film, but that part I felt was uneven because you did hire actors to look like Nicholson and Duvall during flashbacks, but then you cut to the original footage, so it's uneven there, I believe.
Did you feel?
I'm still not spoiling anything, so yes.
I feel like if you are not looking for it, you wouldn't know, and I feel like it flows really well, to be honest. If you hadn't have gone out and looked for the information, it works.
How interesting.
I didn't know that.
No.
And it's what's, what I find interesting here, then, if King himself has written the sequel to find a kind of between space, as it were, between the film that he didn't really like and this now becoming part of, the in a way, his own canon. It's almost as though he's accepted it. Is that what you'd say is a fair assessment? That he's accepted this Shining,
well,
the original film?
He did
film
die
then?
A few years ago, so he hasn't got a lot of say in the matter. Just
no.
about the point, though, with
Stanley
Kubrick.
Stephen King,
yes. Stephen
King.
And King, yes.
Not Kubrick.
Apparently, he did actually want to do something to do with his own version that he made in the 1997,
yes.
If I'm correct. But that he was persuaded otherwise because there'd be a bigger fan base from the loyalty to the
yes.
Kubrick version.
Right. Right. I mean, I really didn't like the kind of the redone The Shining, which was supposedly more
but you know what?
Accurate to the
Dave,
to the
I got
to
stop. Yeah, but Dave, is that redone of The Shining? I know it wasn't great, but if you buy the DVD, that's the only time you'll ever get a commentary from Stephen King on The Shining.
Oh, really?
Interesting.
How interesting.
Yeah.
How interesting. Was it Mick Garris directed that?
Yep, a buddy of mine.
Yeah. I know Mick's work. He's great. I just didn't care for The Shining. It was like a miniseries, wasn't it?
It was a miniseries.
Yeah.
It was very slow.
Yeah, it was slow, but because of, you know, Stephen King signed off on it and did the commentary, of course I bought it. You
know? Yeah.
Of course. So, oh, wow. God, we're going to have to seek out Dr. Sleep, aren't we?
I think I've got to see this now, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But there's another...
Get ready. It's a slow burn, then. Be ready for the slow burn. But what was that, like the recent horror hit, or the horror movie Midsommar, also a slow burn?
Yes.
They're in that same ballpark.
Mm. And George, you've been reading some connected.
I started reading Joe Hill's Lock and Key graphic novel series today. In fact, I read the first volume this afternoon, and it's ace. It's really good. It's again, it's a slow burn, and which is unusual in comics these days, actually, because you don't often, as a writer, you don't often have the real estate to tell a slow burn, long form story. But obviously, being Joe Hill, they've given him that space.
He can do what he likes.
Yeah, exactly. And as I understand it, and I am going to go on and read the rest, and I'll kind of talk a little bit about Volume 1 in a moment, but as I understand it, it's told out of chronological order. So you get this kind of story, and it raises lots of questions as well as telling a kind of self-contained story in itself.
Interesting.
And then it flashes back, and then it goes forward. And essentially, it's pretty brutal. It's definitely a horror comic. It's this kind of mythical Lovecraftian elements brought into it as well, in a sense. So you've got the Locke family, Locke, and they suffer a brutal tragedy. The father is a school counsellor, guidance counsellor, and one of the teenage kids who's been counselling comes and brutally murders him.
Oh, God.
And it's pretty horrific, and the family kind of move on. And they go back to the father's kind of ancestral home, where the father's brother, the kid's uncle. There's three kids. There's a kind of older teenage boy, a girl in the middle, and a young boy. And they go back to this house, and it's called Key House.
Is that a key as in Q-U-A-Y
K-E-Y? K-E-Y, all as one word, Key House. And it's this big rambling mansion in the kind of American... kind of main area, you know, that's classic King territory, New England, and it's in a town called Lovecraft, which is on a little island, like Long Island, essentially.
Yeah.
And there's things about the house just aren't quite right. There's a well locked in a little kind of well house at the end of the garden, these big rambling gardens, and no one's allowed to go near it. And you start to realise, you kind of spend a lot of time with the kids, because it's the kid focus, and the older kid is suffering with guilt because of things that he feels he could have done to stop the situation with his father died. The girl's trying to fit in at the new school, and she's changed her whole look, and the young lad is just kind of naively exploring, and he's the one who becomes the key to everything. He literally finds a key to a door, and he opens the door, and when he goes through the door, he dies and becomes a ghost.
Oh, my gosh.
But then he realises that he can go back through the door as a ghost and re-inhabit his body.
Oh.
So, and it's just a, it's the start of a kind of a whole awakening that there's this this key house has got loads of different doors and loads of different keys that do different things, and there's different dimensional stuff, and then there's something in the well that's, and it's coercing. It's a kind of a bit it's kind of a bit, you know, it's talking to the kid, trying to persuade him, I'm your echo, you've got to help me get out of the well. Oh. And the kid, and the little kid's falling for it and trying to help, and you realize that, you know, the thing in the well asks for a mirror and a pair of scissors so it can cut its hair, because it's taken the form of a woman. He throws them down, and she passes them through the water, and they come out the sink into the prison cell of the kid who killed their dad. And you realise that she's been whispering in the ear of the killer all along.
Oh, no.
And the killer's looking for the keys, and that's what you, that's why you went to find the dad.
Yes. Yeah.
And it starts to all come together, and it's, you know, and you've got this, this killer's on the loose again because he's got this stuff to get out of prison. There's the thing in the well that's on the brink of escaping. There's the little boy who becomes a ghost, and is he ever going to make it back to his body? And, you know, it's all coming to a head at Key House.
Wow.
And it's really good. And that, and really, the kind of, it's only about one of the keys, this whole six-issue arc.
Wow.
And good, you realise it's going to open up, and there's, yes, there's a whole list of different keys and different doors in the house that are locked, and what are they going to do? And what, you know, a little bit of a spoiler, but when the thing in the well gets out, it opens some of the other doors, and you start to get a glimpse of these other dimensions and things.
Wow.
And,
whoa.
So it's really very good, very, very cleverly done.
Very spooky.
Very spooky.
Guys, I would like to quickly weigh in on Joe Hill. I know we're stressed for time, but I'll make it quick. Joe Hill also wrote a film, wrote a book in 2013 called Nosferatu, as in a license plate, NOS4A2.
That's right, yeah.
And we're now currently enjoying a great series on AMC with Zachary Quinto playing the character. And it's good stuff. So that's my truncated version of some Joe Hill. The novel is worth it. The AMC version is worth it. And it's out there right now.
Are there any plans to make Lock and Key, would you know, Josh?
Well, not that I know of, but I am not familiar.
There are. Oh, there are. Ah, George has got the information.
I did a little bit of research.
George knows more than I do.
Yeah.
I know what Wikipedia will tell me anyway. There's been two attempts to make it so far.
Exactly.
But Netflix are making a third go of it.
Oh, okay.
It keeps getting to a pilot and not series, but Netflix have decided they're going to go for it. So,
because when you were describing it, I was just thinking, I really want to see this as a film or a series or something. Sounds amazing.
It does sound amazing. Yes.
Oh, fantastic. So, staying on the Joe Hill theme, David, what's your film of the month?
Right, well, I think we're going to go straight on to the film of the month this time. So, we were kind of discussing what should we do, and we tossed a few ideas about. I kind of like doing old films mostly because I find quite interesting and stuff, but I think you've got to be in the mood sometimes to watch them. So because we were kind of developing this kind of Stephen Kingy, Joe Hilly theme, we both saw a film this last week actually called In the Tall Grass. We thought, well, let's have a chat about In the Tall. We've got some bed coming in. In the Tall Grass. So this is a film that was made this year of all times. It's a Canadian film, written and directed, it says here, by Vincenzo Natali. And it's based...
Vincenzo Natali, guys, Cube.
Cube, did he do Cube? Okay, I didn't know that, so thank you, Josh. It's based on Stephen King and Joe Hill's 2012 novella called In the Tall Grass. And it's got 7 cast members. Harrison Gilbertson, Laisla de Oliveira, Avery Whitted, Will Bowie Jr., Rachel Wilson, Patrick Wilson, and Tiffany Helm. It's quite a fascinating little film, really. Basically, a couple, well, they're not a couple, actually, it's brother and sister, aren't they? And the sister, who must be Laisla de Oliveira, Becky, she's pregnant, and Cal, her brother, they pull up in a car outside an old deserted church somewhere in the middle of nowhere in America. I think it was actually filmed in Toronto, I noted. Alongside this, there's a great big field that's full of basically tall grass weeds. So it's like a cornfield, I suppose, in England. Higher than your head, tall grasses, as far as you can see. And they just hear this kid calling for help. So, help, I'm lost. So they kind of have a bit of a discussion, and eventually they go into the grass to try and find this kid. But of course, the audience has already guessed that once you go into the grass, you don't get out again. And you basically wander around, and you if you don't keep track of who you're with, they will disappear off somewhere, and you won't find anything or anyone. And that's basically the film.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of Triangle, actually.
Yeah,
Triangle was better.
I'll explain that reference. Because as the film progresses, so this couple, they kind of find the kid, but he seems sort of old beyond his years a little bit. He's like he's been in there for ages. And the kid's dog's dead. And you see the dead corpse of the dog. And then while they're wandering around in there, who should pull up kind of outside the field but the family with the kid and the dog, and you go, whoa, hang on,
and time becomes fluid.
Yeah, and they hear them shout, the brother and sister shouting, and the dog runs into the cornfield and the son runs in, and then the parents, the Humboldts, they rush in after them as well. And but every time it's like time shifts. Like you try and follow the sun to follow a direction, and then if you let your attention wander a bit, suddenly the sun's not there anymore. It's sort of behind you. It's constantly twisting you around.
It's a bit like a labyrinth in a way, a maze that moves.
It's like a constantly twisting, shifting labyrinth, but not only in space but in time as well, in that it's sort of back and forth and back and forth. And so Sam mentioning Triangle, that was the film that most reminded us of...
The boat movie.
Yes, that's right.
The boat movie. Because that has a lot of elements of this in it as well. Although I have to say, I think Triangle is a masterpiece, and it will never be beaten.
Yeah.
Because it's just a perfect film.
I have to agree
This kind of was okay, but I tend to agree with some of the critics that it does go on for a bit.
Yeah.
They're trying to stretch as much as they can out of their little scenario. And there's a rock, they find a rock in there, and it all goes a bit supernatural.
Yeah. Go on, Josh. Josh, what's your thoughts on it? Feeling? And then I'm going to ask Eloise, because I know she's seen it as well.
I'll give it two just quick notes on it. I love Vincenzo Natalie, of course, but I thought it had great drone shots. Overhead shots, drone shots.
Oh, beautiful. Amazing. Beautifully shot.
Yeah, but on the bad side, I love Patrick as an actor, Patrick Wilson, but he was definitely chewing scenery like a cat.
Oh, he was. He was. Go completely Jack Nicholson on us, Patrick. We don't mind.
I was like, wow. That's all I have to say. But I feel as he was okay. Worth a look on a rainy day.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think, Eloise?
I really liked it until we got to the rock. I thought it had so much potential. And it's like they sort of gave up and thought, this will work, we can just make it supernatural.
We'll bang a supernatural rock in.
That'll explain
a supernatural
everything.
Rock. Yeah,
that you touch and that's why...
You touch the rock and you kind of become a god and you can control everything then.
It had potential until then.
I got a bit confused because you maybe need to sacrifice people on the rock.
Yeah, there was
reason.
Old cave drawing type things on this rock. It was
sacrifice. Having babies on the rock as well.
I don't quite look at it as a rock, as a giant acorn in the middle of a growing field.
It looked like an acorn, didn't it? Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking at one point what might have been really interesting if it had been something alien rather than ancient, sort of supernatural, because that to me would have made a bit more sense. But yeah, it was a bit.
The baby part was just unnecessary.
Yeah, it wasn't nice. That was
and there's some interesting gore scenes with a pair of scissors in the eye and all sorts of fun stuff going on in it.
Some of it was a bit gratuitous, in my opinion. And the
dead dog was horrible. I really didn't like the dead dog.
But definitely the rock, like you, I agree with you there, Louise, that it just seemed...
And we're not talking Dwayne Johnson, I have to stress here. It's not Dwayne Johnson.
That would have been so much better. Crouched.
People had to touch Dwayne Johnson and become a god.
Yes. That might have been a completely different film.
It did feel a bit like a reset button. It's like, how are we going to resolve this? How are we going to explain it? Oh, I know, we've got this ancient... ancient sort of Stonehenge-y thing in the middle. I think, it seemed a bit of a cop-out.
But as Josh said, it was beautifully shot, and the sense of menace that comes from this long grass and the drone shots across. And I think there's a lovely scene where they hoik the kid up on their shoulders so he can see kind of above the grass, and they're trying to get to a building, and they're walking along. And we're just getting frustrated with them because nobody can walk along watching the person in front of them. They always have to turn and look behind. We're going, no, keep looking at the people you're with.
Because the minute you look away, of course, you lose
them. The minute you look away, of course, it all changes and you lose everybody.
So I'm afraid that's all we've got time for, but a very quick round of those. You didn't see it, I take it, George.
I haven't seen this yet, no, sorry.
So everybody who has then, give us a David, how much?
Maybe a 8-ish, 7.5, 8.
7.5, 8. Eloise?
Probably a 6. 6.
Josh?
I'm with Eloise, at 6 or 7.
Yeah, I'm thinking that too.
Okay.
So you were generous.
I was being generous. Because he did Cube, and Cube was a very imaginative film.
Cube is so great.
Yeah.
Anyone out there hasn't seen Cube, should go see Cube.
And maybe that's another discussion for another day, but until then, thanks so much to everybody. Thank you to Patricia H. Ash, Robin Pierce, George Mann.
Thank you.
Joshua Lou Friedman.
Thank you.
Eloise Sheehan.
Thank you.
David J. Howe.
I'm still here.
And our producer, Alex Levchuk.
So is he.
He's here as well. And I'm Sam Stone. Until next month, we'll speak to you again.
Bye.
Bye.
Of the opera.